Welcome, everyone, back to another exciting broadcast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network, and I am joined on this fine Friday morning by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good. Just taking my drugs, Dave, as
taking
we're doing
this. Taking your pills, taking your dailies.
Hey, you did my voice. Hi, this is Tracy Pearson.
Hello,
this is Tracy
Pearson. You all out there, you know us, maybe, but we write for a little site we like to call Bruin Report Online. It's on the On3 Network. You heard it up top. Right now, if you want to get access to our site where you can read all sorts of great stuff, we published 16 stories yesterday, Tracy, about UCLA athletics.
It was too much, actually. Yeah, we should have saved more for today.
Many commitments. Football practice, transfer portal analysis, all the stuff that you want to know about UCLA sports, we've got it. Maybe even some stuff you don't want to know. Honestly, it's probably true. And then on top of that, you've got message boards full of thousands of people who are as passionate, if not more, about UCLA athletics as you are.
And dropping big old pieces of news, our bros do.
Always. We've got some like high-level donors who, for whatever reason, love to post on our message board. Regardless, you, sir out there, or ma'am, or what have you, you should sign up right now if you have not already, because right now, Tracy, this is crazy, $1, $1 for 4 months. I did the math on this last night. If our stories average about 500 words, right, you're paying like a penny per 5,000 words. Like, you can go back to the golden age of newspapers. You can't find a deal like that ever. Not even when a penny was a real amount of money and not something we're looking to discontinue. Okay?
So I mean, it's like 1880 here on Bro.
It's 1880. We're partying like it's the turn of the century. No, not this last one, but the one before.
It's funny that you said it's crazy, Tracy, because I got a little story. When I was going to UCLA and I was in the dorms, and I was, there was a guy on our floor, and he was so cool looking. He had this huge hair. We called him Crash because he looked like he had always crashed into a wall. And I met him on the elevator, and he said, "What's your name?" And he was from a foreign country, and I said, "Tracy." So he thought my name was Crazy. Mm. So for the entire year, whenever we'd see him, he'd go, "Hi, Crazy." And all my friends thought it was the funniest damn thing. So we kept the thing going all year long, to where I was in some lab with him. We had name things, and I had to put Crazy on my name thing just to perpetuate. To this day, the guy thinks, "God, that Tracy Pearson guy, he looks just like the guy named who's Crazy in my dorm."
That's great. That's
crazy. Okay, sorry.
That's crazy. That was good. Crazy. All right, we got a lot to talk about today.
Here we go.
That's the promo, you know, dollar, 4 months, get in there. But we have a lot to talk about. It was just a week ago, UCLA women's basketball was not yet a national champion. I know it feels like a lot has happened since then, but a week ago, that was not the case. They were not yet the national champions. The baseball team they're still sitting pretty at two losses. They've won like 190 games. I'm not sure total count, but it's a lot. They're never going to lose again, potentially, or at least that's the way it looks. And then we got to talk about this men's basketball transfer portal, which is going bonkers right now. UCLA landed two commitments yesterday, and a lot of people are wondering. Both of them are kind of power forwards, so a lot of people are wondering what exactly is UCLA doing here. So we're going to talk about that.
Two guards, 10 power forwards. That's the goal.
Look, you know what? We joked about the Chip Kelly one quarterback, 10 tight end offense. Maybe. Hey, look, it can happen. And then we got to close the football, which opened up spring practice much, much more to us the last three practices. So we have actually a lot of substance to get into, thanks to media relations and the new UCLA staff. So
it's a whole new world here, Dave.
A whole new world. I can't really hit those notes.
You're way too much of a Disney. Do you believe Dave? Like, he's this communist, this radical, and he is a deep, deep, deeply embedded Disney guy.
I know, man.
Yeah. What's your favorite ride?
Which park?
Overall, let's just go for number one overall.
I'm a big Incredicoaster guy.
Are you? Yeah, that's great.
It's like a really good roller coaster, and it's incredibly smooth. Like,
I'm going to ask you, what's your best part? And if you say this, then we are soulmates.
My best park or my
best part of that ride of Incredicoaster?
The first drop.
The drop. You go, oh my, if I could do that 50 times, I'd just keep going on that ride.
Yeah, no, I can't hit the bottom without smiling.
Just joy. God, Dave, that's amazing. We did not set that up.
No.
It's that drop.
Not set up at all.
I get joy just thinking about it right now.
It's amazing. You know what else I get joy just thinking about, Tracy?
A great transition.
UCLA women's basketball just beating the absolute tar out of South Carolina. It would have worked better if it was North Carolina. God, I wish I'd nailed that. And I can't say anything about their mascot because that will sound really bad. Put it together, everyone.
There you go.
crushed them. This game, so it wasn't quite over at halftime, this game against South Carolina. But for anyone watching at home, like, I was sitting there and I'm like, this game's over. I felt at like different points in the first quarter, different points in the second quarter. I think it was like a 13-point game or something at halftime, but it felt like this was just a complete mismatch. UCLA's intensity, but also just their like general poise and confidence. I don't even know how to like exactly explain it, but it was it was almost like they knew they were winning that game before the game started. And Bob Chesney, UCLA's football coach, actually had a great line about this because he said went to the game.
Wow, that's strange that he would come up with like an articulate line. Yeah,
and he said, I turned to Martin because he was sitting with Martin Jarman, and he said, they're going to win this game. And that was in pregame warmups, just like looking at the team and looking at their confidence.
We have to go to Vegas with Bob.
Yeah, we got to go to Vegas, Big Bob.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, it was an amazing game. Gabriela Jaquez played, given the stakes, her best game as a Bruin, probably. Threw up a double-double.
And you know who we owe to that? My son, Robert. Because I've been telling him how Gabriela has come on in her senior year and is, like, playing. If she were someplace else, she'd be an All-American.
And he's been playing the role of the hater here. And
he's been going counter to me this whole time. And like then at Texas, she had a couple of turnovers, and he's all see. So this, it's him because he gave the negative mojo, which made Gabriela have that game.
Yeah, it was honestly, it was kind of like to my mind, it was kind of like the Big Ten final where it was just like, oh, there's no chance for this other team that's actually quite good. But I would say like South Carolina, they looked a little spent after the UConn game. They obviously had the weird, very weird thing that dominated the headlines after that game where Dawn Staley and Gino Auriemma almost came to blows, basically. But they won that game and clearly put a lot into that game plan. They didn't look like they were prepared for just how good UCLA was. And I think that ended up being kind of a theme of the season where nobody who wasn't paying attention to this team seemed to have a really good handle on exactly how good UCLA was all year. Constantly denigrated by a lot of East Coast.
I was going to say, you got to give a lot of credit to East Coast media. Just never. I mean, how many quad one wins? I think it was a record quad one wins for a women's basketball season. I mean, dominant team, and they got poo-pooed by the East Coast, which probably gave had to be a little bit of overconfidence and a chip on UCLA's shoulder, I'd say.
Well, like how many of the players on UCLA's team would have been the best player on like generic top 15 team?
Yeah, Corey Close said something like that. The six seniors probably would have been competing for All-American status if they were the main person in another program.
Well, like just look at what like Dugalich did in that game where like Lauren Betts goes out with that throat issue at one point. And then Dugalich has maybe the prettiest post move I've seen in a long time, down on the little block to end the first quarter. And it's just like, oh yeah, they've got her as their sixth person who can just come in and do that in the middle of the game. It was just, I don't know. I mean, the talent, the combination of things, like we made the allusion, I think, at the beginning of the year, but it's like women's basketball's kind of at that stage where you can have these just absolute dominant teams that like only could remind you at all of the Wooden years, where it's just like, oh, well, UCLA has the 6'7" person. And so with the 6'7" person, there's, you know, there's like maybe four teams that have a chance of beating UCLA. And that was kind of the case, except like it was just, you know, as you said, the top six. And like, again, like, you know, Lauren Betts obviously would be the top player on virtually any team, but, you know, Kiki Rice would be a top player on, you know, probably the top 15 teams, like, and all, and you go down the line and it's just, what a special team. And they, you know, to cap it off, especially, you know, given the way last year ended, obviously the poetic, end of this would have been beating UConn in the final, which, having now watched UConn and watched a lot of UCLA, I think they would have, like, I think they were going to beat that UConn team if they had met them in the final, but regardless, blowing out South Carolina the way they did, what a perfect capper to that season.
Yeah, my takeaway now, I mean, we don't want to get all into a lot of technical basketball stuff, but your takeaway is that this, I mean, honestly, this is the most enjoyable UCLA season of any team I've experienced in a really long time. I mean, not only did they have a great year, but they finished it off in a fantastic, I mean, I'd say maybe a couple of decades here. That's how good this season was. They were a team that you thought was really good, and then when you started to have a few doubts about them here or there, different games, and they didn't necessarily play well, they refuted your doubt. They would come back, they'd have huge third quarters, or then the next game they'd come back and blow out someone. And the final, to me, just completely epitomized that. They clearly, yeah, South Carolina probably was a little beat up and spent. But the team we saw on that court, I mean, UCLA was just easily a better team. On both teams' best days, UCLA still wins by 10.
To be clear, I don't think the like South Carolina being a little spent played out until deep into the third quarter. Like, I think they're playing their best basketball. UCLA is playing its best basketball, and UCLA was up considerably at halftime. It was only when it turned from like the 10 to 20 point margin and then it suddenly skyrocketed that you could see South Carolina, the wind was out of their sails.
Yeah. And then the thing, the way it finished is, if you've been watching this team, they build the lead against a good team. They would build the lead. Then they'd have a little letdown to where they let the other team back in. So to finish this game where I know most fans are saying, okay, they're at 10, just got to push that to 15. Now they got to push that to 20. Hey, let's try to push that to 25. And it just kept going. That was the feel good fantasy of a national championship game. And then in the aftermath of that, I mean, they've been media darlings, and a lot of it is because these players and Corey Close are just so charismatic. I mean, you got to give Corey a lot of credit. She's a fan. She's a fantastic interview. She's got a few little axioms that she uses, but a lot of times she's very fresh, very insightful, very fascinating about her past. I mean, she's got to be great on the recruiting couch too. I mean, because she's showing how charismatic she is. But the players, their faces, wherever you've seen them, on Jimmy Kimmel, I mean, I just randomly turned on CNN and there was Kiki Rice. They are just very charismatic, all of them, and I think the media has picked up on that. I don't know, maybe I'm biased and I'm only seeing it through a little prism. And I know Michigan, the men's team, I know they won the championship, Dave, but I think the women's team got at least, if not more, UCLA women's team got more media after winning their championship. You saw that not just locally, you'd see them everywhere. So great ambassadors for the university. Corey Close said at one point, her comment was, well, this should really help with transfer recruiting. So it's a really fantastic dynamic time right now for UCLA, with the women's basketball team leading the charge.
Absolutely. So there have been some news with women's basketball transfer recruiting. They picked up a commitment yesterday from Bonnie. I'm going to say Diaz. I don't know if it's Dees. She's Australian, so it could be either. But she's an Arkansas guard, 5'9", and averaged 9 rebounds a game last year.
I watched a little tape on her, and this is why, Dave. She's really quick, and she's got a motor, dude. Like, love our team this year, but there's no one quick with a burst with her energy level. It gets crazy. So that's what she really brings to the court.
Yeah. So that's one. We also have a women's basketball transfer possibilities story that you should check out. It's posted on the board right now.
Couple of nuggets in there, bro. Nuggets.
Including maybe a returning friend from 2 years ago who could be arriving back in Westwood here shortly. So check that all out. But a historic season for women's basketball, absolutely dominant kind of season you don't see in any sport very often, except
speaking maybe, of historical seasons,
maybe the UCLA baseball team, which is having a it's not even just that it is having a historic UCLA season. Like, this is, they're 30-2, 15-0 in conference.
It feels like 50-0.
Yeah, they are currently riding a 24-game winning streak, including having just swept the only other good team in the Big Ten, USC, at home.
That's a 3-game sweep. That doesn't kind of happen.
Yeah.
Against two good teams in college baseball. It just doesn't. You don't have that kind of pitching.
So they're absolutely crushing, but this is okay. It's trending towards obviously the best regular season in UCLA history, but this is also like, I've seen tweets of people who really follow college baseball who are like looking at it statistically and they're like, oh no, no. In this cumulative stat, meaning a stat that like incorporates the entirety of the season, UCLA is already a top 10 team all time in college baseball.
They're going to have to win a national championship to finish that statement off.
And the thing is, like, with women's basketball, dominance plays, right? Like, if you're dominant, you're making the Final Four, and you are having a really good chance at a national championship.
Baseball
is a variant sport. Anything can happen. Yeah. Like, you could have a pitcher who suddenly just, you know, gets whacked a couple of times, and he's a really good pitcher, but it just happens.
Yeah.
So, first, to already be at 30-2 is insane. Like, that's crazy. But also, like, you can't, like, necessarily say, oh, they should win a national championship. But, like, God, they're really good. They're really, really good. And it's not just, like, oh, they're dominant pitching. They're kind of light hitting. They're kind of dominant batting. And they're kind of light pitching. No. Like, the pitching, starting pitching has been pretty good. The bullpen has been insane. And the lineup has been, you know, kind
the
of
offense
everything
is insane.
They're
it's
so
like
good.
A video game. I mean,
they are so good, and like the throw-in transfer they got, Will Gasparino, is absolutely mashing. He has 13 home runs.
Just if you watch the highlights of games, it's hysterically funny. I mean, it just doesn't look real. It looks like a weird video game.
Just anyway,
we're setting them up for disappointment, aren't we? Because
they're on the road, I think, at Rutgers this weekend. Rutgers, like everyone else in the Big Ten, is super bad. Like, just they're, I think, barely over 500. They just beat Fullerton on Tuesday. So right now it goes Rutgers 3-game series, UC Santa Barbara at home on Tuesday, then Minnesota 3-game series, then Hawaii on Tuesday, then Sac State 3-game series, then UC Santa Barbara again, then Michigan State, LMU, Oregon, Washington.
So none after of those they get back, ranked. Yeah, just after, and here's the other thing, after they get back, from Rutgers, they don't leave Jackie Robinson Stadium again until, they go to UC Santa Barbara April 28th. And you were saying all of these teams, all of their opponents, well, they ain't great, right?
None of them are ranked.
I mean, we're cursing them, Dave.
I'm just saying, like, look, it's baseball. They're going to lose a couple times.
They're going to lose one game.
It has to happen. But the dominance they're showing at this point is literally unprecedented in UCLA baseball history.
10, 11. I mean, they got like 12 games ahead of them against mediocre teams all at home after after Rutgers.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so here's
go what out I'm and see them.
Yeah, here's what I'm saying, people. Kind of the same way we were saying with women's basketball. Like, the level of dominance is just, even if you weren't a huge women's basketball fan, got to check it out. College baseball, not a huge spectator sport, but you owe it to yourself. If you're in the area, go to Jackie Robinson. Tickets are cheap. They may still have an alumni deal. I'm not sure. Used to be able to, you could just get in with your alumni card, but tickets are cheap. It's a great place to watch a game. They're absolutely mashing. So get out there. And a lot of these games are televised on Big Ten Plus. It looks like some of them will be on the Big Ten Network, especially once they get into deeper.
But they look like they're all televised. So
yeah, all of them are televised. So you can and should watch this team. They're awesome.
And they swept USC. We didn't emphasize that enough.
And they swept USC, which was really fun. So, yes, another dominant team that has a very good chance at winning a national championship this year in college baseball. All right, now we're going to shift gears into something that has become I feel like every thread on the message board, now that Michigan is done winning the national championship and we no longer have to read about Adai Mara anymore, every single thread is, what is UCLA doing in the men's basketball transfer portal? So just to set the stage for everyone, UCLA has retained five of its six eligible players. Well, I should say five of its five eligible players for next year, because Sky Clark's eligibility is still uncertain. He's the only one who entered the transfer portal. All five of the other guys, Eric Daly, Trent Perry, Eric Freeney, Xavier Booker, and Brandon Williams, are all returning. In addition to that, they are bringing in Joe Filon and Javonte Floyd, so that's seven guys. Yesterday, they earned commitments from Sergei Makura, I want to say?
Sure.
And Filip Jovic, two power forwards from the SEC. Makura played at Mississippi State. Jovic played at Auburn. Jovic was a freshman last year. Makura is listed as a sophomore from last year. I do not know the dynamics of his eligibility, but for Mississippi State,
he came in as a sophomore. Given his pro club, he came
counted
in
as a year or whatever.
Yeah.
So those two are committed and signed. So that is nine guys for next year. Unless you are bad with positions, you will note that of those nine guys, Tracy, how many of them are what we would call power forwards?
42.
Correct. That is correct. That is spiritually correct. In actuality, four. Four of them are. And some people were positing that Xavier Booker maybe, you know, could play some four. So you got four guys who are definitely fours. That is Eric Daly, Brandon Williams, and then, in our opinion, Filip Jovic and Sergei Makura. So people are wondering what
did you mention Joe Filon?
And Joe Filon, look, okay, and that's another conversation, because Joe Filon, in our opinion, I should say mine, you can join me, is a college four. Gonna be a college four. It's gonna get bigger, stronger, be a college four.
I think he's yet to be determined, because he's actually a kid who has shown that he has the quickness to play to defend the three. His body's pretty lean. I mean, he's like 180, 185 pounds. I mean, he looks like a small forward. In high school, he's so good around the basket, he plays power forward wherever he goes, on AU teams everywhere, even the post. So he's been pigeonholed as a power forward, but he's actually a guy athletically, physically, who after a few years of development could be a small forward. This year coming up, though, you might have to slot him as another power forward. So how many is that?
That's five.
Okay, so everyone is drawing conclusions from this. Does this mean Eric Daly's moving to the three? And just,
I will wander off into the forest, never to be seen again.
That sounds really interesting. That's like a reality TV show of Dave in the forest, correct, never to be seen again. So this is how this happens. I think the program, you know, very well about this, self-aware, let's say, and slotted Eric Daly as the four for next season. Then how you recruit the portal is really dependent on what players are there, what reps you know, what agents you know, who comes to you and says they're interested. So if you just slot Eric Daly at the four and you got Brandon Williams behind him, you feel, I mean, I think generally you'd have to feel, okay, the four is kind of set, but you wouldn't, you'd, like I wrote a couple of times, they might take another power forward just to maybe upgrade at least the backup minutes and or challenge Eric Daly. I think that would be a good thing to get him challenged, to try to drive him to play more consistently. So I think that was the mindset. So then they get the opportunity to get Filip Jovic, who's a promising prospect. As a freshman, he flashed some athleticism, couldn't shoot, good around the basket, active, looks like a pretty decent natural rebounder, started to, I think, start, get more minutes towards the end of the season. You know, he could defend fours. He might be a five when you play small ball, even though I think that might be a little bit of a stretch because he's even smaller than Tyler Bilodeau. Might be able to move his feet to guard bigger wings. So you think, okay, this is a good addition. He'd be another, he might be upgrading, let's say, over Brandon Williams in terms of overall upside of talent. And he might challenge Eric Daly. But then the package deal says, well, why don't we just throw in this other guy who's attached to the agent and you'll get another guy and for really not that much NIL. So UCLA, there's, I mean, you can keep bringing in guys, right? It, there isn't a cap of 13 scholarships like there used to be.
There's a cap of 15.
There's a cap of 15, but who will ever get there? Well, maybe this team. So
because they're already at nine and they don't, they have one guard.
Yeah,
two guards,
well, that's the other one. So you can bring in Makura, and it's kind of contingent to bring him in to get Jovic, who is the guy you want to push Daly. I am not making excuses for this. I'm just telling you how this went down. I would guess that the NIL spent on both of them will not impact the other players that they are pursuing. So that's that. I'd say there might be a legitimate, now you guys are all worried about the power forward thing. I don't think you need to. The thing to worry about right now, there is only really one guard who can play really significant minutes, and that's Trent Perry. You've got Eric Freeney. He's a two, but he's still, he's a bench guy. They need to fill out that backcourt because, as we all reported this week, Sky Clark is as separated ways with UCLA. So, yeah, I would say the guard situation is probably more of a worry. We've been talking about that they are involved in the recruitment of John Blackwell, the guard from Wisconsin, very talented kid offensively. He is... also his dad went to Illinois, so they're involved. We heard Michigan was also involved. There, Blackwell's been in LA with his agent checking out the neighborhood. So I think there's a good chance there, but we have a healthy skepticism about that. He would, if you added him to Trent Perry, and Blackwell can play a little bit of lead guard, and he wants to try to showcase that for the NBA. So he would be doing that a little wherever he goes. So there would be Trent Perry and John Blackwell would be your backcourt with Eric Freeney coming off the bench, and then probably another lead guard. I've listed a few of those guys. You'll have to go look at the tracker to find out who those guys are. I can't be that cagey about Blackwell since I put his photo on the front page. So that's where the guard situation is. They are still looking for other guards. I'd say that's their most elaborate list right now. There are two guys that we've talked about a lot. There are some other guys who are more like smaller shooter combo guard types. So go to the tracker and check out all of that. I might be adding one or two more today also.
Yes. And there is a guy, who we still can't name.
Yeah. Who's a also, wing.
Not who also really hasn't entered the portal.
Hasn't entered the portal. People have asked me why that is. And I would say everyone's kind of stumped on that right now. They're definitely with this person, his agent. It's definitely a strategy here, I think. And what it's a strategy to try to accomplish, I don't think anyone's sure right now. But, yeah, we're waiting on that guy. And, I just want to say, too, we're not playing games here at Port Online by not reporting a name of a recruit. This isn't inspired by us. We would love to give you everything. But the program doesn't want some names out. And even if, Dave and I have done this, we found names independently because we have our own sources. But even in that instance at times, we won't report a name if it could be detrimental to UCLA's recruiting efforts. We're not doing this. And if you have a beef with it, have a beef with the program, because this isn't inspired by us. We're not playing games. We're trying to honor this whole situation. But for one thing, a lot of times the kid, the agent, don't want his name out there for whatever reason. We're not in contact with this agent, but that has happened quite a bit. And there is one time when, it was Jamar Brown. We did not release it. Someone else did. And I absolutely know his NIL price went up by like 30% to UCLA for them to secure it. So we're doing this not out of playing games, but for a real legitimate reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's killing us. I got to tell you,
it's murdering us. For us,
And here's the thing, we are the biggest site. People do coaching staffs monitor bro because of the information. We let it out. It's going to probably disseminate out there. So we hold that responsibility pretty high too. So there you go.
Unfortunate reality. I guess here's another question.
Post. We got to go over post.
No. I want to go something else first. Okay. So this wing position, this wing thing.
The wing thing.
People, their consternation is about whether or not Eric Daly will play the three. So, Tracy, in a disaster scenario where UCLA doesn't land a true three, or even like a third guard that you would ideally start, which one of these power forwards do you think would be your starting three?
You would think that might happen, and it very well could. Given the history of Mick Cronin's, how he plays, utilizes players, that could happen. Toward the end of the season with the three guard lineup, that is also an option that could happen.
Correct.
In
the scenario where they don't land a starting three and none of the guards they land are an option to start at the three. Like say they only land another starting level one and the rest are true backups. Which one of these power forwards would you start at the three?
Dave? You're asking, I know it, there's this is a rhetorical question. it could be Eric Daly. You're right. It might be someone else.
I can talk myself into the idea. Wait,
we forgot to add one more potential guy. Mm. UCLA is kind of seriously now recruiting Nicholas Kamenya.
True. That's also true.
Who, in my opinion, his real position is as a four. I think he sees himself as a three. And it's nothing against him. All recruits see themselves as the smaller, just go down the position size. If you're a power forward, you see yourself as a wing. If you're a wing, you see yourself as a point guard. If you're a post, you see yourself, you go down too. You see yourself as a wing. That's how it is, because they think that's what they're going to need to be to make it in the NBA. Kamenya, I think is a his position is power forward. He might be recruited as a three, and maybe he could be. I think offensively he would be. I just doubt, again, defensively. I watched him a lot at Duke. He is a dedicated defender. It's just, and he got switched off onto smaller guys quite a bit. Great effort in defending them. There were just times when his foot speed wasn't quite there, but he was a freshman. But let's throw him into that bucket too.
Great, great. So we've got another theoretical guy to add to the list.
So Nick Kamenya would be the wing. God, I found myself an option there, didn't I?
And then there's posts, because among these many power forwards, none of them are probably ideally a five. So UCLA still needs a post. They still need a big guy who can man the middle. They have Xavier Booker on roster, and he made some strides towards the end of the year. But they are recruiting posts. And
there are two posts that are are probably coming in for official visits this weekend. We're gonna make people subscribe. We can't give away everything in this podcast. We work really hard. We can't give away everything in the podcast. So, and our bros know, they know what we're talking about. So two guys who could take official visits, two posts, probably this weekend.
Yeah. So check that out on our tracker if you want that info. Okay. So that is the state of things with men's basketball transfer recruiting.
Oh, wait, there's another four, and that could be Xavier Booker.
You're so funny.
No, I'm just piling on.
There's so many power forwards. Maybe some of these guys should try playing a little football. Did that work? I don't know. That might have been a stretch.
Ooh, I don't know. That was a stretch.
I think Eric Daly would actually be a pretty good tight end.
I think Eric Freeney.
Eric Freeney would be a very good tight end. UCLA football is out at spring ball. They have had four practices so far. Practiced last Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, and then this past Thursday. They will be getting into full pads tomorrow. So what we've seen so far are mostly the shells and shorts type practices. In very cool and very welcome news, after Thursday, when we got kind of, I would say, similar access to Deshaun Chip era, we got full access to last Saturday's practice. So we were able to not only watch the whole thing, but they gave us kind of roaming access where media relations would walk us around the field. And just so you know, this sounds like an obvious thing. This is not a thing that UCLA had done previously. We had to kind of just sit in a corner and hope we could see things.
And where that came from, just so everyone knows, Bob Chesney met with the media before practice last Saturday. And took us up into the theater of the Wasserman Center. We're all sitting there, and he starts saying, "So, what would you guys like? What do you want to do?" And we're all kind of a little taken aback, and we started, you know, asking for a little. And then I said, "Hey, we're like banished to a little place in the corner. Could we get a little bit more access?" Like, I was hoping just to go out another 20 yards. And he turned to the sports information, goes, "There are a bunch of people walking up and down the sideline anyways. Why can't they?" And we're all, what did he just say? So, and sports information has been fantastic. When we've literally said, "Can we move up that sideline?" They go, "Sure." And they kind of escort us down there. But, you know, they trust us, but they've been great too. So unprecedented access to the field.
Yes.
That we've had.
It's been awesome. So we had that on Saturday, and then Tuesday and Thursday, we were out for like some of the team periods, but we got, you know, most of the beginning stretches of practice through individuals, and then an ending team period along with some special teams. So we're seeing a good amount now. And so, you know, we actually can start to develop opinions and thoughts about the team that we really weren't able to last year heading into the season because, you know, obviously we have sources, we have information, but a lot of people sunshine pump, you know, heading into a season. And so you can only trust it so far when you don't see it with your own eyes. And that's not to say our eyes are perfect. We're going to get some stuff wrong, but you know, I can write a preview for a season more capably when I see it myself before we go into the year. And so we're actually seeing some stuff, which is really, really helpful for us. And really helpful for you, because we get to actually write extensive practice reports, and then you get to learn a little bit more about the team from our eyes. So Tracy, guess what are your to use a common question from Bob Chesney after every one of these practices, what are your big takeaways so far, Tracy? Any guys
who stood out, coach? If you've noticed, Coach Chesney and the two coordinators are not going to answer that question, at least early on. And they're doing a great job. Hey, I want to call out that. So we've gotten the coordinators for two practices, two of the last three practices. And so how long did we go without getting a coordinator under Chip Kelly?
Literal years.
Yeah. So then we get, I'll admit it, you know, being a media, you're always got to complain about something. And after we got him the first time, the media is sitting around, you know, saying, why are we getting coordinators a second time? And we actually said, well, we didn't used to get him, so we shouldn't, you know, really complain. The two interviews those guys did yesterday were excellent interviews, both of them. A lot of the questions were great between Ben, myself, our boy TM. But man, some great answers. Hitchler, defensive coordinator. That was a fantastic interview. Please go watch that, man. Excellent. So got a little bit off track because they are all dancing around, not trying to name guys, and completely get it. First thing, the takeaway is trying to take away too much on who to fill out the ones and the twos. And
yeah, don't do that.
Because they are using freshmen, sophomores. They are first two practices. I don't think Sahir West even took a team rep with the ones. I mean, you can't take much from it. Right now, watching the offensive line of who lines up with the ones, it's almost been completely different from practice to practice. Dave and I have been trying to rework our depth chart, and I think we're just going to hold out for a few more practices just to see the way this all shakes out.
The only thing that, like, you should focus on reading, but also we should focus on watching, is where are guys practicing? Not, you know, with the ones, the twos, the threes, the fours, whatever, but, like, one thing we can say with certainty at this point, J.D. Rayner is a tackle. We originally had him as a guard. He's a tackle. They've got him at right tackle literally every practice. He's a tackle. Okay, that's one. We can say pretty definitively Scott Taylor is a stand-up edge / Sam or Jack or whatever you want to call it. Okay, we got that locked in. Cole Cogshell playing the same position. Okay, so those two guys who were playing different positions last year are now playing the same position. Got it. But other than that, like even Scooter Jackson, a couple practices ago, I was like, he might be a starting corner. Well, Hitchler was kind of poo-pooing that yesterday and saying, well, he's playing everywhere, and it might be because Roderick Pleasant is out. So,
which was funny. You and I just said that he's probably a corner because Pleasant is out, and then Coach Hitchler said that.
So there's a lot of moving parts, but, like, that's kind of what we're focusing on right now is where. Because, like, right now, yesterday, Madden Iamaliava was apparently with the quote-unquote twos, but from everything I've heard and seen so far, that pretty clearly is Ty Dieffenbach, who's the number two guy right now.
And I'd say even no matter where those quarterbacks were working yesterday, yesterday's practice reinforced to me that Ty Dieffenbach is leading in the competition for QB2.
Also, like, let's just start there because Ty Dieffenbach, very unheralded coming in, but we were both at the first practice last Thursday. I think we may have mentioned this last podcast. I can't remember. We were both at the practice, and, like, one of the immediate things we both saw is, like, that guy's got a really live arm. Like, it was just lasers out of his hand.
Great motion, great mechanics. Okay, here comes the overhype that y'all can call me on later. If you just walked out to practice and and Nico was somewhere and you couldn't see him, and you saw the quarterbacks and you knew nothing about anyone, you'd say, oh, that's a returning starting quarterback. Just by his size, his motion, his throws, the way the ball comes out of his hand. Of course, we need to see him more in team periods.
Yeah. But
if you had to identify someone, you'd say it was that guy.
Yeah, no, and please remember and throw in our face our Ashanti Woolard evaluation.
Everyone does.
From 12 years ago, 13 years ago. But yeah, I mean, the physical mechanics stuff is really good, and also he can move. We've seen him run a lot now, and for a 6'6"-ish, maybe 6'7". Honestly, he looks a hair taller than Nico.
Yeah, I say Nico's probably 6'4 to 6'5, and Diefenbach is 6'5 to 6'6.
Yeah, he's got some wheels. So he's been intriguing so far. Offensively, I mean, it's just it's so many moving parts on offense. The big takeaway right now is Sam Yoon is out and probably out for the entirety of spring. And Riley Rebel has been, again, quote unquote, with the ones, but I think more importantly, he's been the one snapping it to Nico Iamaliava basically every time I've watched them in team.
Yesterday, again, it was different. It was Derek Osmond. So you can't take a, it's really hard to take a lot. And maybe within another week, we'll start to see more repetition on people at certain positions, especially on the offensive line, because we all want to get a handle on that.
Yeah, what we've heard is that the depth, like by the end of the spring, we might start to see some actual depth.
The takeaway yesterday, I mean, usually practice number four in the spring, the defense is ahead of the offense, and the defense was ahead. I mean, it's easy to play defense in spring practice number four. You go, okay, I got to go there and knock down that ball. Offense, there's so many moving parts. There's so many mechanical things. There's timing. There's everything. So it's always the defense. Even for experienced teams, the defense is ahead of the offense. And that's the way it was. There were the requisite virtual sacks. We saw enough of those yesterday with, they were actually blitzing against, that. We've seen it in spring before where they weren't allowed to blitz for a couple of practices because they couldn't execute a pass play. But they blitzed yesterday, plenty of virtual sacks. The thing that kind of stood out to me was we're used to a running game kind of just in the team periods just getting shut down. There was room in this running attack. Anthony Woods broke off one, touched like 25-yard touchdown. There was, there was running space, from the line of scrimmage upfield 5 to 6 yards. And then, you can't tell because no one's tackling, but it was consistent through the practice. There were in team periods, there was good running room. I'm going to personally take this. You could worry about the defense. Yes. Legitimate worry. We don't know how that defense is going to go. A lot of guys that have to step up and prove themselves, but Dave, this team needs a running game. We haven't had one in a while, and James Madison's offense was really dependent on a really strong, consistent, reliable running game. And this is way too early to take this from to derive any kind of conclusion. But that's just a slight little indication that the running game might be pretty good. That's what I'm taking from it. Mm. Yeah. See how positive I'm trying to be?
You thinking anything about scheme at this point is ambitious. I would say, I getting back to some of the personal and speaking to like kind of the defense stuff, the personnel stuff, defensive tackle. I still think that's kind of an open question. I will say, like, physically, Tyson Ford looks like a guy. Like, he just looks big, strong, and like really well proportioned. It hasn't happened for him to this point. He's had 3 years of college and he's been hurt or behind guys on a depth chart and yada, yada, yada. But he looks good physically. Darryl Dengohi, the Rutgers transfer, he looks like kind of, he's not super big, but he looks like one of those really good leverage linemen who can just get under everyone because he is pretty squat. He's probably not much more than 6 foot, 6'1". And, you know, packing a lot in that kind of, you know, shorter frame, gets low. So a guy like that can be really, really effective on the interior. The one I'm kind of not skeptical of, but I wonder about his ability to contribute. This is his second year of college football. So, and he redshirted last year and was also hurt, is Maxwell Roy. He still looks like he probably needs some work to do physically, where it's like, you look at Tyson Ford and you're like, that's a college body. Like that is a body that is, you know, he's already been in a weight program, really developed his lower body, has gotten, you know, kind of everything is working right. Maxwell Roy still looks like he needs to do some of that development. He's big. He could probably be a plugger, but he's not. When I was watching him move first practice, doing like back pedal drills and stuff, it's just, you know, the short area explosion that you would want from a guy who's a playmaker at defensive tackle, it was kind of missing. I would want to see more of that.
The guy yesterday who was running with the ones and stood out and was a bit surprising, I definitely had a look at the roster, was Amir Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Looked very impressive. He was with the ones with Aiden Gobara. Aiden Gobara is, I mean, it was listed last year, 260.
265, 260.
He's bigger than that. He's a big dude. He is not carrying any like excess weight. He, you know, they were running, going through walkthroughs at the end of practice, and we're standing there waiting for the coordinators to come over for interviews, and they're taking everything off because it's hot. Aiden Gobara is a well-built dude with long, long arms. The guy, though, that was impressive yesterday was easily Amir Washington, a transfer from Texas Tech. He made the best of running with the ones yesterday. He showed some quickness. He got in the backfield a number of times, batted down a Nico pass. Looked impressive. And I'm going to take away from that maybe he's playable. And in that rotation, he looked large. It was funny because my takeaway from watching the defensive line in drills was there are big guys here. Tyson Ford is big. He looked like he's like an offensive tackle looking guy to me. He's large. Maxwell Roy is a big guy. Gavin Blum, the JC transfer, I was surprised at how big he was. Whenever they're listed like 6'3", I thought they'd come in and be 6 foot. He's actually really large. And Amir Washington was pretty big. It made like the other guys, like AJ Fuamayono, who was listed at 6'4 and 3'11 last year, he looked smallish compared to these guys. So there's good size. But yeah, so that was encouraging that Washington had a good day. We'll like to see going forward what happens. Does he get more chances with the ones? So that's kind of where the interior DL is.
Yeah, and then I think linebacker is going to take a while to sort out for us. You know, they've been trying different guys at different spots. We've seen a lot of Sammy Amasigo, but there's also been Donovan Palat working with the ones. Jalen Woods has worked with the ones. I think Juju Walls is with the linebackers based on what I saw.
It's hard. They're flipping so many people in and out. And on defense, you know, they move the nickel in or they're moving guys around. It's hard to nail it down. But, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the edges, Sam's. Like I said, Sahir West was there and working with the ones.
The other guy at the defensive end position.
You know what, though, Dave? He stood up, too. I mean, they're doing a lot. They stood him up and backed him off the line at one time. So they're doing a lot of stuff. But generally, he looks like he has his hand down most of the time. Scott Taylor, he was definitely with the ones yesterday on the other side at that edge Sam position. And we've seen him probably.
I don't think I've seen him not with the ones.
Not with the ones. Cole Cockshell, Anthony Saka, the transfer from Notre Dame.
Lucien Holland.
The interesting one is also Aiden Gobara, because he's been like a three tech. We might have to move him inside on this depth chart. Dallin Havia, also playing kind of that three tech inside. So it's going to be interesting where this all sorts out. But the defensive ends, it looks like unless something really happens, it looks like Sahir West on one side, and then that Ed Sand would be Scott Taylor. And he, I mean, he was, it was funny. I was ready to write a lot about him. He was looking good, moving really well. And then he got kind of burned on a underneath route. So, okay. He's still got more to learn and, you know, be able to defend guys coming out of the backfield. But yeah. That's where the edges probably are.
Yeah. See, linebacker, I think it's still kind of uncertain. I mean, obviously everything is uncertain, but I'm not seeing anything super obvious there at this point.
Donovan Pilott has been getting more run with the ones than Jalen Woods, even though Woods has. So that might be slightly significant. So
yeah,
far.
I'm guessing offseason workouts played a big role in kind of early impressions for this coaching staff. And Donovan Pilott is awesome in the weight room. So yeah, and then the secondary, like we said, Roderick Pleasant is not doing a ton in team, and so Scooter Jackson is definitely playing a lot of corner. I would say just it makes sense for Scooter to actually end up playing corner this year. Because Dante Lovett has been largely the other outside corner alongside Scooter Jackson. They have varied, but I would say that's probably the leader in the clubhouse. And DJ Barksdale is playing nickel. DJ Barksdale has looked pretty good. I would say physically he doesn't look like a high P4 player, but he runs really, really well. He's stuck with guys very well. I wouldn't be surprised if they lean on him as the starting nickel. And then Scooter Jackson, it's a question, well, are you starting him over Cole Martin or Teo Johnson at safety? Or are you starting him over Dante Lovett at corner? And that's the one that makes sense to me because he has all the physical ability to kind of do all of these roles. And I think the one that might make most sense is going to end up being corner.
Yeah. It was interesting to see. Watch. It's just not only where people are, but how they're working off each other. Tao Johnson and Cole Martin have kind of been mainstays at the two starting safety spots. So I think you can probably strongly pencil that in. And just watching those two guys play off each other, it looks like they've had, Tao Johnson, just the way he moves, how he works within a defense, he just knows what he's doing. So, but then there's Tashawn James, who we've talked about, that he looks large. And I watched some of him when I had a chance. He was working with the twos yesterday. He was pretty impressive. I'm pretty confident in the safeties. Aaron Williams was working as the number two nickel yesterday. He was getting it from Hitchler. He was lined up on the wrong guy, found the guy before the snap, was a step behind in coverage, and then recovered, and the ball's only a little behind. But then he knocked it down. So that might be the spot for him. It's going to be hard, Dave, until Roderick Pleasant returns.
Yeah.
I mean, where he actually is.
Yeah, he is doing stuff. He's just not.
He's in a black no-hit jersey. And it'll be interesting to see if he actually comes back to, 100% full contact anytime this spring.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting in it. And I think.
And we didn't mention, did you mention Dante Lovett?
I did.
Just a bit. Very impressive. He's starting at one of the cornerback spots right now.
Yeah, first string.
Yeah.
They're not playing any games yet, Tracy.
True, very true. He's with the first string.
Yeah, and then offensive takeaways, I mean, we've kind of talked about the offensive line already. There's so much movement there. Like, we expect Jordan Davis to probably start at tackle this year, left tackle.
He was at left tackle yesterday, so there you go.
But that is the first practice where we have seen him in the first string at left tackle. Yeah. Every other practice, it's been somebody else as the first string left tackle. So I would take that all with a grain of salt. Like, JD Rayner was with the ones at right tackle for two or three practices. Probably not going to end up being the starting right tackle as a redshirt freshman coming in from JMU, but, you know, I don't want to rule anything out. I would say the more interesting thing is who's getting reps at center with Sam Yoon out, and it's Riley Rebel and Derek Osmond. So if in your heart of hearts, in your dream of dreams, you are hoping that Sam Yoon snaps are no longer a factor for you, those are the two guys who are probably next in line to start at center. guard is interesting because Eugene Brooks has flipped back and forth from left to right a bunch of times. So I'm sure they're trying to build versatility there. Because it is two different things. Like, it's, you know, how you step and all that kind of stuff is different, which side of the center you're on. But that, I mean, offensive line, they're just, they're rotating so many bodies through there that it's really, really hard to say. I would say one thing interesting is we have not, I don't think we've seen Jalen Jeffers. He has another year of eligibility. I haven't seen him out there. I
can't remember if like the first couple of days I saw him.
I've been looking and haven't seen him.
I think the first day I saw him.
Okay. Cause I didn't see him Saturday.
Well, we'll look for him to see if he's there.
Yeah. So we'll take a look, but I haven't seen him in any team reps for sure.
I just saw him standing on the sideline of a drill, I think the first day, but maybe I'm hallucinating.
Maybe you are. So that's offensive line. We still have a lot to determine there. Tracy brought up running backs earlier and some of the guys who are looking good there. We talked about quarterbacks. I would say the other things are tight end and wide receiver.
Dylan Lee is a big guy.
Dylan Lee is a big guy, and he also moves pretty well for being a big guy. I saw him take in that Saturday practice that was wide open. They were doing one-on-ones at the goal line. It was passing drills, and he ran a route where it was like kind of just a simple little flat speed out, whatever you want to call it, where he basically ran 3 yards and then cut to the sideline. Looked really good and fluid doing that. Caught the ball, touchdown. It was really, really nice. He's made a couple of plays that were really athletic. So, I mean, people, I think, considered him kind of a throw-in. I think, where was he at previously?
Iowa State.
People considered him kind of a throw-in and maybe a power back. Obviously he's big. Big dude. But looks a little bit more than a power back to me. Looks like he has some upside. So, and then Carson Cox, physically.
That's your guy.
He's looking like a college player now. Big, but also running pretty well.
And Wayne Knight was sideline inactive with the strength and conditioning for just yesterday's practice so far.
This competition for snaps is going to be a bloodbath, is my point, at running back.
Overall, the recruits are – yeah, I'm sorry, moving on bigger picture a little. Recruits are talking about it, and it's not just BS. There is an energy to practice.
Oh, yeah.
And it starts with Chesney. We made the joke that he was, cloned because he was in so many different – you feel like that on the – practice field.
There's like a GA
that looks just like him, or his son.
Like him, wears like the clipboard in the same place.
No,
paces around the same way.
I said I wasn't going to fall into that trap, and I made sure when I was recognizing where he was. He's right in the middle of these drills. He is like the circus leader running this practice. He comes out to the middle of practice, says some things like he's leading a circus and everyone rallies around him. It's a really amazing kind of thing.
Really energetic dude.
Yeah, but it trickles down. And then the energy of having so many recruits there too. Like the one observation we didn't get about halfway through practice when we were there, they did one-on-ones, OLDL, and it was in the middle of the field, and then the entire crowded around and we couldn't see anything. So, that was our only drawback because we love to take a lot from those OLDL one-on-ones in practice. We're going to try to, by the end of spring, see if maybe one practice we can get up on a balcony somewhere so we can see that. But that was really about the only thing we couldn't see. So, but the energy, like from that drill, just incredible. They ended the practice, or close, with a punt blocking drill where one of the staff is back there acting like a punt. And man, for a punt blocking, there were so much energy, from the players and from the coaches, from the recruits there on a punt blocking drill. Just really fun to watch.
Yeah, it was. It's been like that basically every day. They've had almost 100 recruits or more at every single practice so far. I'm anticipating it will be a zoo again tomorrow. It's the energy level. Like, people like keep asking about, like, what's it like? Is it like the Mora years? And I'm like, God, remembering that far back is a little bit difficult, but honestly, it feels better than that.
It's just like, different for one thing. All of those analysts, everyone can be on the field coaching. Back then, you just didn't have that many coach. There are so many guys coaching. So there, it's a huge effort that is being orchestrated compared to back there. So there's, just because you have more coaches running up and down, coaching up guys, yelling instructions, there's more energy just from that standpoint. So it just seems to, there's less standing around in drills. There's more involvement player by player. It's different. It's a different era of college football practice. So it's hard. Compare it to Deshaun Foster and Chip Kelly. And it's really different than that.
Well, it's just so much more organized. This is so obviously a professionally run organization, like, and not in the like NFL, like, but just like, oh no, these are guys who have coached in college a long time and they know how to do it. And it's just, energy level super high. They're moving between drills very quickly. What stood out about the first Deshaun year was that they suddenly went to like these insane practice. Like, anybody who's ever coached youth league anything or any sport at any level knows that you cannot just sit there and practice the same drill for like longer than, God, I don't know, 5 minutes. Or people are going to go insane. Like, you can't do it the exact same way with a bunch of people standing on the sideline and only one or two people in the rep for longer than like 5 minutes, or else people are going to go crazy. And they would have these team periods under Eric Bieniemy that would, like, yes, with small breaks in between, not to do anything, just to take water, they would have team periods that lasted like 45 minutes where it was just team period, team period, team period. And so you've got 11 guys playing, 11 guys on the other side, and then everyone else just standing there doing nothing for the entire time. There's just none of that.
Like, from the quarterback standpoint, most of the drills, they've broken it up into two. It's two quarterbacks each, and two quarterbacks throw, two quarterbacks throw. It was previously, last couple of years, and they had more quarterbacks, obviously, in fall. But there was five or six guys in one line just waiting to get one rep. Standing around waiting. Just that kind of organization has changed.
Yeah. And it's obviously very welcome. So anyway, lot to continue to discuss over the coming weeks. We anticipate getting very similar access the rest of the way. So we should have a lot of coverage as kind of the depth chart, I would say, comes into focus over the next 2 weeks. I think by the end of the spring, we should have a much better idea of who is in line to start, or at least competing to start, because we did get, you know, some info that that's going to start to be the case maybe towards the last week of spring. So,
yeah, you'd think they'd want to get, you know, their projected starters in at practice for at least the last week, get
especially
some
gelling, the
gelling going on.
Yeah, especially on the offensive line. Yeah. All right. Well, a lot. That was a lot. If you want more of this, obviously jump into Bro. Like I said up top, it's $1 for 4 months. We're, you know, getting started on three. We're only amazingly 40 days into our run at on three. It feels like we've been there forever. But $1 for 4 months, that'll get you through the beginning stages of fall camp and all of the offseason recruiting, all the rest of spring ball. So a bunch of really, really highly important times in UCLA athletics. So hop in now. But for that guy over there, Tracy Pearson, I am David Woods, Bruin Report Online, and we will talk to you again next time.
See y'all.